overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
To our Sunday celebration. Oh, and Happy New Year. This is January 3rd, 2021. And I'm glad to report that I'm still here on planet Earth. And we had our beautiful revealing service this morning, and my dear friend Charlotte said maybe we'll be a kinder, gentler nation in 2021. So we put that into consciousness right now. It's important that we build the consciousness of peace, if we would have peace in the world. It's important that we embody kindness and gentleness, if we would see that reflected in the world. Hermes Trismegistus said, as within, so without, as above, so below. And so when the within flowers as peace, then we might just be surprised to experience peace on earth and goodwill toward all. Truly, it is an inside job. To launch this new year, I'm going to be exploring some old friends of mine. One is Eckhart Tolle's The New Earth. For several years, we would start the year by teaching that class, and we won't be doing that this year, but I will be using him as a muse to inspire the many talks throughout the month of January. And Eckhart Tolle speaks in a way that my heart can hear. He says phrases like, evolve or die. It doesn't get any harsher and yet simpler than that. He cautions us, if we as a species do not evolve into a higher order of being, very likely we could perish from the planet. He talks about there have been many mass extinctions, and we as a species by taking responsibility for who we are, we can be the shapeshifters here on planet Earth, shifting away from an egoic, materialistic perception of separateness into a soulful remembrance that we are in truth one, one life. We are inseparable. And it's not just the human species, but it's all life. All life is part of God's life, the one life. And so this Sunday, I'm going to be speaking about the flowering of human consciousness. Flowering. For a gardener, that's a beautiful phrase. Eckhart Tolle does an enormous testimony about how the soul flowers, how a flower is the most beautiful expression of the soul. How the Buddha held up a flower and one of his disciples saw it and smiled and in the silence received the message that we are here to flower from within, that this human consciousness is to flower as to what we are. Eckhart Tolle says, everything flowers. He says, if you take a piece of coal and you subject that coal to thousands of years of tension, it will flower into a diamond. And he says, if all of life has the potential to flower, could we let our consciousness flower? And then he quotes the book of Revelations, and he says, behold, there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And the voice within says, Behold, I make all things new. He goes at length to explain that that new heaven is the new consciousness. And once that consciousness of oneness is realized, then the earth, the world, the outpicturing shifts as a reflection of that. So instead of affirming the problem as truth or the dis-ease as truth, as my friend Marie knows, could we affirm the wholeness as the truth of my life? Perfect health is the law of my life. Yes, I might be experiencing a roadblock here and there physically, but perfect health is the law of my life. There's chaos being stirred on this planet by our president right now. Could we know that peace and order are reclaiming our planet in a kinder, gentler way amidst the appearance of chaos and discord? Could we be the ones seeing the possibility of a greater order of being? This is a choice that we all get to make. We can either choose to identify with the egoic mind and the problems on the planet, or we can choose to identify as this universal soul, what Barbara Marx Hubbard calls homo universalis, the universal being, and let that flowering of this awakened presence occur within our hearts and our minds. Everything we do at the center is to support this flowering. I happen to be a gardener. It's probably the greatest profession that I was born to do. And a gardener plants a seed in the soil. But first, the gardener prepares the soil. The soil represents our consciousness. And the seeds are illuminating ideas. What is the most illuminating idea that we could plant in the soil of our consciousness? That we are one with God, that we are one with our neighbor, that we are one with the trees and the rocks, especially the rocks for Charlotte over there, and that they are our family. They're all our relations. So throughout this month, we're going to be exploring how we might navigate. And next week, I'm going to be speaking about the wisdom of not knowing. We all want to have answers, but could we find that there is a place where we don't know? And in surrendering into that, we get to discover a fresh way to journey. The mistake is to think we have the answers. And the greater place to exist is in the beginner's mind that has that courageous spirit that steps out into the unknown, knowing that we will be divinely guided and assisted. And by right of consciousness, we will attract to us those that are there to assist us. As Charlotte's beautiful granddaughter came to her to share a deep, painful moment, knowing that she would find a safe refuge in her grandmother, whereas perhaps she might not with her mother and father. So could we be that refuge for those who are seeking to be validated and seen and loved and supported in this time of troubles? Following this month, I'm going to look at original wisdom, the wisdom of the indigenous people, how they didn't have all the issues that we in the civilized world have because they recognized from the get-go in their original wisdom that we are one with the birds of the trees. We are ones with the trees. We are one with the stream and the creatures of the air and the creatures of the water. And that there are brothers and sisters. Next, I'm going to be looking at the simplicity of life and how when you make it really simple, it gets deeply profound. And lastly, at the end of this month, I'm going to be looking at a life that's lived in grace. So this is the intention that I set for the new year, for this first month of the new year, that we get to travel together, bumping elbows, embracing each other with our eyes, wearing masks, safe distancing, and being there for one another. Rumi says, we are here to walk each other home. And the irony with that is that we're already home. Home is a state of consciousness where we know that we are established in that vibrating field of the one life, the one love, and we are that. And when we go astray, sometimes all we need is a friend to bring us back and to know that you are loved, that you are seen, that you are whole, that you are beautiful just the way you are. And then, as my friend Nikki says, they're all our children. And they're your children. You would not abandon them, no matter how crazy their life might get. So could we do that for one another? When you're ready to play with me, I want you to open your eyes, put your hands over your heart, look into the eyes of love, with the eyes of love, and open your hands, and let the octopus teacher in you spread your tentacles wide into the world, knowing that you are a divine expression of the one life. I love to play with this stuff. I really do. We had our world peace meditation on Thursday morning at 6 a.m., and I managed to do it on Zoom land, and it was a relative success, I would say. Trey got up that morning, and he put some really soft piano music on in the background with birds chirping to kind of set that, to set the vibration. And it was 6 in the morning, and people showed up, and I wanted to start the world peace meditation with a prayer from Thich Nhat Hanh, who was one of my first teachers. In fact, this calligraphy behind my head was penned by Thich Nhat Hanh. I have arrived, I am home. And he wrote a beautiful little book called Being Peace. Now, the title speaks volumes. He didn't write a book called Doing Peaceful Things. No, he wrote a book called Being Peace. When you find peace in your heart, then everything you do comes from peace. You peacefully make the meal. You peacefully rake the yard. You peacefully walk your dogs. You know, it's a way of being in this world. And here's his sweet prayer for world peace. And I want to share this with you, and I invite you to take this into your heart. He says, as we are together praying for peace, let us then truly be with each other. Let us pay attention to our breathing. Let us be relaxed in our bodies and our minds. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become wholly ourselves. And let us maintain a half smile on our faces. When I studied with him, he talked about meditating with just a Mona Lisa smile on your lips. Even with a mask, you can try this. And you can feel the alchemy of that smile, you know. So he says, place that smile on your lips. Let us be aware of the source of being common to us all and to all living beings. There is a power, there is a presence that we all access that's common to us all. He's asking, can we meet in that presence? And he says, evoking this presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion toward ourselves and toward all life everywhere. Once you find this vibration of compassion, it just radiates out with equanimity. Let us pray that all living beings realize that they are all brothers and sisters and that they are all nourished from the same source of life. There is no greater or smaller in this beautiful dance of the one. And then let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. I'll say that again. And let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. Finally, let us plead with ourselves to live in a way which will not deprive other beings on this planet of air or water, of food or shelter, or the chance to live their life. And finally, with humility and with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on all around us, let us pray for the establishment of peace in the hearts of those here on earth. Let us pray for the establishment of peace in the hearts of those here on earth. And then he says, amen. There's plenty of places to sit, Serena. Just find a little seat for yourself. There you go. Yeah, so you had a taste of Thich Nhat Hanh praying for peace. Yeah. So this month, we're going to be exploring a new heaven and a new earth with the Eckhart Tolle idea. And as he says so beautifully, it's about the flowering of human consciousness that must occur within each one of us. And he asks the very simple question at the outset of this large book. He says, are you ready or are you not? You have to be ready for the flowering to occur. And in order for that to happen in our hearts and minds, it means that we step out of an identity of someone who's separate of the me person, and we move from the me in a strange sort of sense to the we. It's not about me. It's never been about me. It's not about you. It's about this presence that we all share. And he says that is the awakening of human consciousness, that which preceded thought, which preceded the egoic mind. So could we go to that place before thought? That simple awake awareness, as Adam has on his license plate, the no mind. Eckhart Tolle asked the question. He says, can you imagine how free you'd be if you lived in the no mind, when you weren't tyrannized by your beliefs and your opinions and your judgments and your concerns and your worries and your anxiousness and your awfulizing and catastrophizing? Can you imagine how free you'd be if you were living in the no mind of a rock? That's why Charlotte carries around all her rocks. They're free. I remember I did a shamanic retreat years and years ago. I think even Sam Bridman might have been there. And we were outside in nature, and they were asked to find an object in nature that spoke to them. And people came back with pine cones and branches. And this one woman came with a rock, and she was holding the rock. And I said, what is the rock saying to her? And she started to cry. And I says, what's wrong? And she says, this rock knows it's a rock, and I don't have a clue who I am. And I said, isn't that wonderful? The rock knows it's a rock. So could we take communion with a rock, perhaps, and let it pass on its peace to us? I mean, it sounds crazy, but if we're all connected in this beautiful dance, these threads that are woven together in this thing called life, could we find our family in everything and everyone? So let me just give you a flavor of Eckhart Tolle, because he inspires me so much. I keep going back to him every year. He says, in order to awaken for this flowering of this consciousness within us, he said, it can only awaken those who are truly ready. Not everyone is ready yet. And so for those of you who want to change your family and try to wake them up, do not do that. You cannot awaken if you're not ready. And so that's the greater part of wisdom, is work on yourself. And then ultimately we transform others by being the example. They see in us what they want to example in the world. So he says, not everyone is ready yet, but many are. And with each person who awakens, the momentum in the collective consciousness grows, and it becomes easier for others to do so. When I was a brand new minister 32 years ago, they had a theory called the 100th monkey. And it was based on an island somewhere in New Guinea, where these monkeys were on this island, and one monkey had figured out he could dip his something in the salt water and it tasted better, whether it was his banana or whatever. And then another monkey went over and he dipped his thing. And by the time 100 monkeys had learned that by dipping the banana in the salt water, it tasted better, it was like the 100th monkey, then they all. It was in collective consciousness. So what if by you awakening and you awakening and you awakening, we create this 100th monkey critical mass. That's the word, critical mass. If enough people awaken, Trey and I are watching the show. It's called Visible. And it's about the history of the gay liberation in our country. And it starts off what they call in the dark ages, when I was living in the 60s in New York City, when being gay was illegal. It was a crime. Whereas medical science called them mentally ill and emotionally distressed. And as Trey and I are watching this, we lived through the dark ages. But it took the evolution of consciousness. It took someone like an Ellen DeGeneres to come out on national television. And then after a while, it became acceptable. And now you have RuPaul's drag show where transgenders and all kinds of things are being seen and loved and accepted. But it was the evolution of consciousness. So in my brief lifetime, I've had to learn to come out of the closet first to myself, to a community, to a religion that condemned you, to parents that thought you were sick, and to learn self-love. So he's saying it's possible for us as spiritual beings to awaken from all these religious differences and dogmas and to find a spirituality that can uplift. You know, imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. Huh? So what if we could step out of all those forms and commit to this awakening process? He says this, a glimpse is enough to initiate the awakening process, and this glimpse is irreversible. Once you've had a moment where you realize that presence within you, you know, for me, it started on a dance floor when I was 19 years old, and the choreographer said, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. And in that moment, I started to discover. And then I did my master's thesis on the anatomy of inspiration. Where does inspiration come? It comes from within. So once you've had that glimpse of that something greater, it begins to flower more and more and more. Serena sent me this song that she's coping with the COVID by singing this Spanish song. She loves Spanish music for some reason, Raul. And she sent me the lyrics of it. And it's all about, beloved, I surrender to you. I open to the mystery of life. And I says, you keep singing that song, girlfriend. Because as you declare it to the universe, it starts to become a reality within your own heart. So this is what Eckhart Tolle says. An essential part of the awakening is the recognition that we also have an unawakened one. And it's my friend John O'Donohue who says, what if it's very simple is to take that one shard of your unawakened part and bring it into the light. We all have something that is still caught up in resistance, in judgment, in fear and concern and anxiety. A troubled part of ourselves. So he says, could we embrace that part of ourselves? He says, the ego, as it thinks and speaks and acts, as well as the recognition of the collectively conditioned mental process that perpetuates an unawakened state. We have an awful lot of that going on in our country right now, where people can actually believe in like this QAnon thing or some crazy ideas. And once you speak about something that isn't true long enough, ultimately you start to believe that maybe that is true. So we have to have the discernment to have a BS detector, a belief system detector. Is this a belief that I want, or is this something that doesn't make sense anymore? My beloved Marie Perez, when she was getting treated for cancer and they were pumping in all this medication, the truth from within her says, no, enough of that stuff. It's destroying my system. And she went naturally, and she's healing in a much more organic way that is right for her. So could we, when those big, dark demons show up in our dreams, as my beloved Terry's did, could we be willing to face them and say, this isn't true for me? And by facing that darkness, as she said in her dream, the darkness literally dissolved. The problem dissolves. The idea that this is wrong dissolves, and we realize that it's not wrong, it's just our way of evolving. So I had to come into this incarnation as a young gay man in order to embrace that part of myself, so that when a trans would be standing in my bookstore, who'd been rejected from her home in Moulton and her home in Cullman, she came to this center so that I could put my arms around her and say, but you're accepted here. You have found a home here. So what if we get to do that in an awakened sort of way, as our role here on the planet? He talks about, let's see, I wanted to do one little thing else. Strengthening of one's conceptual identity, one's self-image. You do not become good by trying to be good, but by finding the goodness that is already within you and allowing the goodness to emerge. My friend Richard Rohr says, you don't change your life by changing your thinking. He says, when you start acting differently, that's what he's saying, when you start being a kinder, gentler person, your thinking just naturally changes. So thinking doesn't precede action. Action precedes thinking. When you start acting like a mensch, when you start doing kinder, gentler things, you begin to have kinder, gentler thoughts. And so it's kind of the back way. Once I be it, I begin to see from it. And so this is going to be the inspiration for this month, I hope, as we navigate this new heaven and new earth here on earth. I'm also here to remind you that this week we start our new class. And the new class is going to be based on this book, What the Mystics Know by Richard Rohr. I taught this maybe 10 years ago because the book is all marked up, but it was one of my favorites.
5 years ago.
5 years ago. Thank you, Serena. Oh, well, 5, 10. It's just a number. 5 years ago. So it was fairly current then. And I guess I was inspired because of my friend Raul, who just loved Richard Rohr, and I started reading his books, and I got hooked on him. And my beloved Lisa Ferraro, who's launching a ministry in Columbus, her ministry basically started when the COVID-19. So she's become a master of doing virtual ministry. And she's going to be handling the technological part for this particular class. So if you want to be in the class, there's going to be two offerings. There's going to be a Tuesday night at 6 o'clock our time. It's an hour and a half. And then there's a day class, which is on Wednesday mornings, 10 o'clock our time to 11:30. And the way you register for the class, because she'll send you a link on Zoom, is you go to what they call Soul Call Ministries. It's all one word, Soul Call Ministries. And then there's a thing called classes. And it pops up, Raul's the first one to register. You just go on there and you just register. There's no cost for it. It's a love offering basis as we do all our classes here. There is a donation button there. If anybody wants to leave a donation, she said any donations that come into Soul Call from Alabama go to Alabama. So it's up to you. But the beautiful thing is that we can come together in a virtual world and we can cover this material. Now, the reason I chose this, it's an 8-week class and it's exactly what Eckhart Tolle, it's for those who are ready to live from a higher frequency of being. And the mystics are that. You know, in this teaching called The Science of Mind, it's written on three levels. The first level, the lowest level, is called the mental science, which basically says what you think is causative to your experience. Jesus said, it's done unto you as you believe. So we can spend all our time working on our thoughts until you evolve to the next level, which would be the religious science part of it. And the religious science says there's a power greater than you are in the universe. Could we surrender into that? Most of us have had a taste of that, a feel of that. This something that I literally feel it channels through me. Jesus said, I have myself do nothing. It's the power within that does the work, right? So could we find this religious science? But then ultimately, the highest level is the vibration of the mystics, which is within all teachings on the planet. You don't have to be even in a religion. And a mystic knows that they're one with this power, that all there is this power. And so Richard Rohr, this wonderful, irreverent Franciscan monk who stands up to the Catholic Church and he'll speak to a whole bunch of ministers out there and he'll say, you got it all wrong. He says, you seem to put God up in the heavens when God is a power and a presence within you. And he talks about being not monotheistic, but... Raul, what's the word? Panentheistic. Thank you. You know, we call a monotheistic, there's one God, God up there in the heavens, right? And he says, we're a panentheistic teaching. And panentheistic means that God is everywhere out here, but God is also operating in here. It's within and it's all around. Now, that's what the mystics know. It's like Rumi would say, it's the drop in the ocean that says, oh my God, I'm not just a simple little drop. I am the whole ocean existing within the drop. And so he has what he calls the seven pathways in order to embody this deeper self. And I'm just going to read you these simple little pathways and you can see what the 7 weeks are going to be. The first week, we're going to talk about the enlightenment that you seek already dwells within you. So, in other words, stop seeking it. Stop being the seeker and start being the sought. It's already there. I'm going to close with a little John O'Donohue at the end of this talk when he talks about this living presence that exists within your own heart. So could you turn to that? Could you turn to the kindness? Could you turn to the joy? Could you turn to the peace? It's already there. It's not something you get. And the beautiful thing is if it's not something you get, it's not something you can lose because it's something that you are. So that's the first pathway, is to know that it's already here. You've already arrived. You're already home. It's time to wake up to that. The second week, we're going to look at God is found in our imperfections. It's not in being perfect. It's being flawed. Could we love our flaws? I shared with you the first time I spoke about this, that in the Native American spirituality, they would weave their tapestries and they would always leave a flaw in the tapestry so that the soul could escape through the flaw. So what if those things that we think maybe are our shortcomings are the gifts that we have? Huh? So find the imperfections, those beautiful flaws through which the light shines. My first lover told me that my teeth were too big and that I shouldn't smile. So I went through life not smiling. And now I realize that my imperfection is my most beautiful feature. I'm just saying that. I have to goof on things. The third week is from great suffering comes great wisdom and great joy. So could we embrace then the suffering that we go through? You know, there's a lot of death on the planet right now. People are suffering the loss of loved ones. There's suffering when people are standing in food lines and they don't have enough to eat. They're suffering when children are being taken from their parents and put in cages. They're suffering from refugees that are fleeing their countries and literally taking their families' lives in their hands to find a different way of life. So could we know that there's wisdom and joy in that suffering? If you've lived as long as I have, you've had a certain amount of pain. You've had growing pains. That's why there's the Awen growth. But through those painful times can be a liberating time. Oh my God, I survived and it made me stronger. So he's saying that the third path is from this great suffering, and we're going through a bit of it on the planet, is the potential to have wisdom and joy flower within us. This is the flowering within our hearts. The fourth week, he says, the mystical path is a celebration of paradox. You learn to live. When I did my ministerial classes, we would always start by teaching them the dark side of the light chasers. And basically it says, if you can't embrace your shadow side, you can't know the light. So the paradox is, by opening to the darkness, we find the light. By opening to the contraction, we find the expansion. By opening to the fear, we find the courage. So the paradox is, it's not about only seeking stuff that makes you happy, but it's also about knowing the stuff that is a little bit difficult. Could it be the doorway to our liberation? Huh. If it doesn't kill you, it makes you better. So could we find the wisdom in our own suffering? And then the next week he talks about contemplation means practicing heaven now. He's a contemplative monk. And a contemplative monk sees God everywhere. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. So could we know that this contemplation is literally putting our consciousness in what he calls a heavenly state? Now, heaven is not a geographical location. It's even Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind, he says, keep your conversation in heaven. So then you get to ask yourself, when can I find the kingdom of heaven within myself, the sovereign counsel of God in my heart, where I find that presence just flowering in everything I see, in every conversation I have, in every thought that arises? And he says, a contemplative will be living in heaven. Huh. And when you live in heaven, what do you think you create on earth? You create heaven right here on earth. And maybe you'll get a red convertible if you're really sassy. She's embarrassed by that. Nextly, he says, you'll discover the truth. In order to discover the truth, he says, lastly, you must become the truth. Huh. You must become the truth. The truth isn't a concept that someone hands you and said, here's the truth. Because if it were that simple, we would all be regurgitating the truths that, oh, you're born in sin, that you're, I would be an abomination in God's eyes. Is that the truth? No. The truth is that I was born innocent and pure, as is everybody else. And once you, this truth awakens, he says, then you become the truth, that you live from the truth. And there's a wonderful saying that says, the facts are the enemy of the truth. My friend Marie Perez knows the truth is that wholeness is the law of her life. The facts are she's got some physical issues she's dealing with. And when you know the truth and you embody the truth, it takes preeminence within your body over that stuff that you've falsely identified. I'm not my problems. Then you stop being a problem solver. Start being someone who lives in that beautiful place of truth. The truth that Oliver Wendell Holmes says is incontrovertible. And once the truth awakens, you see the truth in everything else. You see the truth of Christianity. That the virgin birth was about that purity being born in our hearts and souls. It wasn't about a little boy in Bethlehem many years ago. That's what it's about. The resurrection is about the awakening of the presence within us that was never born and never dies. Ergo, there is no death. So you begin to see the greater truth that was woven throughout all these teachings, but it's misunderstood when the ego gets in the way and wants to concretize it and make someone the exception. Jesus wasn't the exception. He was the great example. There's a whole big shift. Now, a lot of people don't accept that, and they'll get angry when you talk like that, but that's what the truth would say. No truth teacher would say, I of myself am the only way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father. But no truth teacher would ever say that. What they would say is, the I am is the way, the truth, and the life, and the I am is what we all are. So awaken the I am within yourself, which is the nature of God itself. And the last week, this is my favorite one. He says, when you are transformed, others will be transformed through you. Through you. So then you become the example. You know, that's the greatest way a parent can teach their children, is to be the example of someone who has the courage to live their authentic life. Then your kids will have the example, well, if mom can be authentic, if she can step out of the system and live her authentic life, well, then maybe I can do that as well. So when you are transformed, you transform others just by the very act. Boy, doesn't that set you free from trying to rescue the world? It certainly did me. When I started in this teaching, I was kind of like Ashton. I went around telling everybody, what's wrong with them? You need to get your act together. You're creating your suffering. I lost all my friends in the first year. And then I stopped doing that. I thought, it's enough for me to just work on myself and to let whatever this thing is that has awakened within me, to let it continue to flower. It's a flowering. And you know, the beautiful thing about a flower is it starts off with a seed, then the plant puts down the roots, then the plant grows, but it may take years before a plant is ready to flower. You know, it's so funny, being the horticulturist that I am and studying all that I've studied, there was a friend of mine, she had planted a dogwood tree, and the dogwood was like 5-10 years, still hadn't flowered. Well, some well-meaning soul said, your dogwood isn't stressed enough. So this person, she started hitting the dogwood with the hose, like, well, the stress of the abuse for the dogwood, it bloomed its head off that year. So what if sometimes, in order for us to flower, we have to go through a certain toughening up by life, and it takes the time, however long it is, in order for this thing to flower. You know, it was, so let me give you John O'Donohue as the final icing on the cake here, because he talks about presence in a way that nobody else talks about. And he uses a German word. He went, he loved Goethe and he loved Meister Eckhart, and he's from Ireland. So in order to give Goethe and Eckhart the credit they were due, he went to Germany and he learned it from German. He wanted to read the original manuscripts. And Meister Eckhart has a word called Gelassenheit. I don't know if I said that correct, Gigi. But he said it's one of his favorite words. It means living in a vibration of harmony and calm. This is what Raoul needs right now, the Gelassenheit consciousness. No matter what's going on out there, you're in this kind of beautiful flow. I have little Zen moments. I keep the little notes in my book sometimes to remind me. And in this one, there's Marcus Aurelius, who says the first rule is to have an untroubled spirit. Wow. To be an untroubled spirit. And the second rule is to face life as it is and see it as it is. Not how you think it should be. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. No, it is. We have a COVID thing. We have a morphed part of it. It's spreading. Could we have be able to see it clearly and then navigate with respect? My dear friend went to his chiropractor where nobody was wearing masks, and he read them Kay Ivey's rules. You could be thrown in jail for breaking the rules. He had the courage to stand up to ignorance. It's important that we do that with a loving heart. This isn't acceptable right now. I told you there was a lady who wanted to come back to the center, and she doesn't want to wear a mask. And I said, well, then you can wait until we're maskless here. I just take it off to do this little talk, and then it goes right back on, because that's the respectful way to do it. So Walking in Wonder. Now, this is an interesting book. This was his last book, and it was written posthumously by interviews that he had made with different people in Ireland. He was 52 years old. He died of a massive heart attack on a Sunday morning, but he lives on. And he definitely lives on in me, and he speaks to my soul. So this is what John O'Donohue says. He says, there's an uncreated place within you and within me, uncreated and yet always creating. And he says, if therefore you want to bring God alive within you, he said, it is to that place that you must begin your journey. So could we go to that journey to the God within us? My friend Charlotte, she finds God by painting rocks. But first she falls in love with the rock. And then, just like Michelangelo, she says to the rock, what do you want to be? And this rock might want to be a ladybug. And this rock might want to be a tree. And this rock might want to be... Because she's having this relationship, this intimacy with something as humble as a rock. So he says, both men and women can give birth to this divine presence within themselves. And you don't need to go anywhere at all to awaken this divine presence. We could do it right here on Sunday morning, on January 3rd, 2021, right here at the Center for Spiritual Living, and just say, awaken thou that sleepeth. Awaken. I am ready. I am opening. I am allowing to discover that which is always there, to let it wash over me, to let it fill me with a felt awareness of my connection to everything and everyone, to let it sing through me, to let it dance through me, to let it paint rocks through me, and to find joy in that. This comes uniquely to each one of us. He says it's a coming home to your soul, to the house that you never left. It's important that we make that one essential shift if we're going to have the flowering of human consciousness, that we move into the identity that we're an eternal soul, like Sam Brigman is still here with me. And we have this temporary phenomenon called the human life that is here for a beginning and it'll have an end. But who we are is deathless and eternal. And maybe we've been here many, many a time before. And we incarnated in this incarnation to fully awaken. And we attracted one another to support that journey. So he says, I often think that the spiritual journey is about the conversion of a tiny splinter within our own minds. He says, most of our mind knows that we are eternal beings, but there is that one small splinter which is haunted by distance and exile. But if we can bring that splinter home, that part of us that thinks we're mortal beings, mere mortals, if we can bring that splinter home to the soul, well, then Tess is right here with us, smiling, and Etika is with us. And then we can become one with God again. And once we taste this God presence, nothing else will satisfy us. This is Richard Rohr, this Franciscan monk, Raoul Mai's friend. Once you taste that, nothing else will satisfy you. And then he does a prayer for presence, which is what I'm going to read to you and then close in meditation. This is his prayer for presence. And he calls it the doorway to the presence that we all share with a big P. So this is Jhana Dhanu. Now he's speaking to presence itself. You know, the presence is within you and it's all around you. So this is him speaking to presence. He says, awaken to the mystery of being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Awaken to the mystery of being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. Have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. Let beauty flower all around you and let love awaken within you. Let beauty flower all around you and let love awaken within you. Receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon. Receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon. And respond to the call of your gift and the courage to follow your path. And may you respond to the call of your unique gift and the courage to follow your path. Let the flame of fear free you of all falsity. Let the flame of fear free you of all falsity. And may warmth of heart keep your presence aflame. And may warmth of heart keep your presence aflame. May anxiety never linger around you. May anxiety never linger around you. May your outer dignity mirror your inner dignity of soul. And may your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of soul. Take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. And be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul. And be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul. And lastly, may you experience each moment as a sacred gift woven around your heart of wonder. And lastly, may you experience each moment as a sacred gift woven around your heart of wonder. So we've called forth the presence. We've opened our hearts and our minds to the mystery of belonging, to that which does not come and go, but that which awakens within us the light of our being, the love of our soul. and we rest as that. This is the mystic path, to know that we are that. That we are that presence. It's awakening within our hearts. It's awakening within our minds. And we are the observer of the consequences of that. So as the heart awakens to the presence of its own being, we observe how that heart acts in the world, how it navigates, how it resonates with others. An open-hearted awareness doesn't so much see others and call them different, but embraces our connections. It builds bridges, not walls. And so we rest in the consequence of this new heaven within ourselves, observing our world all around us as it begins to mirror back our consciousness. As we send out the vibration of acceptance, we find acceptance in the world. As we send out the vibration of understanding, we receive a reflection of being understood. As we send out a vibration of harmony and calm and an untroubled spirit, we see a world that seems calmer and less troubled, all because we are the fashioning factor of tranquility. As within, so without. And so we come here to this Sunday celebration to access that which is always there. Oftentimes, this light comes out of the dark places. Oftentimes it is the suffering that brings the wisdom and ultimately the joy. And so we look upon this dance of life in a detached but yet engaged sort of way. Perhaps we needed to go through X, Y, or Z in order to find our liberation, in order to be ready for the flowering of human consciousness within ourselves. That we had to bring that splinter of ignorance into the light of awareness so that the part of us that was asleep is no longer running the show in our lives. As we begin to notice that we are that which is before thought, we start to discover that no mind that Eckhart Tolle so beautifully spoke about, a mind that is free, belief and concept, worry, thought, problem, that mind isn't our mind anymore. Yes, it's in the background, kind of like a noisy channel on the radio, but now we are operating from a different consciousness, an awakened awareness, where we see God everywhere because we found this presence within ourselves. Is it that simple, David? Yeah, it's that simple. Well, why didn't you tell me? Because you wouldn't have believed me if I had. You have to make this discovery for yourself. And so we stop. We stop our narrative. We stop our awfulizing. We stop our thoughts, just for this brief period. And I invite you to place your hand over the awakened heart, right there. In Christianity, they call it the sacred heart. Huh. It's the heart of the one that knows no other, that sees itself everywhere reflected, and we are that heart. Just pause long enough to know it intimately as what you are. When I do this simple little exercise, it always says to me, and I will never leave you or forsake you, that I will always be there for you. And I breathe into that heart space, and I breathe out from that heart space. It's that simple. It's not complicated. And then the thoughts that should arise, they tend to arise from that loving presence. It is what I am. It is what you are. So to this spacious place, to our own eternal nature that John O'Donohue spoke about, Let's say the heart salutation. I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the deepest aspect of myself. The beloved presence within me bows to the beloved presence in you. And in this spaciousness, we are one. When you're ready, open your eyes, open your hands, and let your light shine. Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you for sending in your donations. Remember, we're creating a kinder, gentler nation just by showing up as the flowering of this new human consciousness. And you are that. And I bow to you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.